Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing.
Think stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right, it's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to, the show that's going to tell you the truth about how corporate power is turning the American dream into the impossible dream for the working person, the show that rattles the left-wing limousine liberals who sit on their high horses while the working class fights their battles for them, and the show that loves to point out how the so-called professional media is selling us down the river by not reporting the news. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Avecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Oh, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this show. But first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec at bellsouth.net.
Okay, and I want to thank all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. Also my friends at rantradio.com. Tuning in on Mondays and Thursdays, my friends at WNYmedia.net out of upstate New York, and everyone listening in from the blog or from their iPods.
And hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It's been a little while since my last show, but it's the Christmas holiday. I think you can understand that. Just been a little hectic. And, of course, I'm concentrating a lot on the new Cup of Joe reports, which I'm doing every day, which can be heard on Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid, and he's available through the WhiteRoseSociety.org. And a lot of stuff going on there. Hopefully some good news on that front in the next couple of months. I've got a guest in the studio. Once again, my friend Phyllis Huster from CountPaperBallots.com. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi, Joe, and hi, everybody. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. That ought to piss Bill O'Reilly off.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. Happy
War
New Year.
War on Christmas. There you go.
What a bunch.
Happy Kwanzaa. Is there... Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. And
Festivus. Festivus.
Happy Chinese New Year for you Chinese folks.
Chinese New Year is when?
I think it starts real soon, like January 1st, maybe.
No. It's
February.
February
1st.
They don't celebrate it the same day we do. And that's really weird because we talk about all our traditions and hallowed traditions. They've been doing, what is the Chinese calendar up to, like 5,000 something?
Yeah.
You know, so they're like, when they started their calendar, they were throwing rocks at each other in Europe, you know. It was still Stone Age practically then.
Considering that China controls all our debt, we all ought to be learning Chinese because we're going to be waking up saying "morning, boss" to Chinese folks here pretty soon.
I hope not.
Yeah,
I like Chinese food, but I don't think I want to go that far. So you're on because
I got some good stuff.
You've got some news about Diebold. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, I don't know if you guys noticed, but the activist community has done a great job. Kudos to Brad Friedman and Bev Harris and all the folks that have worked really hard. Joyce McCloy, who got Diebold thrown out of North Carolina. Oddly enough, Diebold refused to put their source code in escrow. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, the court demanded them to do that as part of the lawsuit, and Diebold refused, so they just basically left or got kicked out.
Yeah, and what it boiled down to is they actually paid the Board of Elections in North Carolina, paid as a, you know, they basically bought them off to let them do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though the judge ruled that they couldn't, Diebold got the Board of Elections to say, that's okay, we're going to certify your software anyway. We called it the Immaculate Certification because there was no reason to certify. And
even though everybody and their uncle said these things are bad, no good. We'll certify them anyway.
Anyway, which just goes to show, even in Georgia, that the Board of Elections, Kathy Cox, they're all on the take from Diebold. They get to whoever they have to get to, pay them off, and they're done with it. But the good news is, the funny part about North Carolina is they. Where the rubber met the road was they said that the CEO of Diebold must agree that a copy of all the software that's running on the machines would at least be held somewhere, and he was unwilling to legally sign off for that. So right off the bat, we know that Diebold doesn't trust itself. Mm-hmm. And so that's what and then the Electronic Frontiers mm-hmm. Foundation, Matthew Zimmerman and Joyce McCloy brought a lawsuit, and they essentially got what amounted to $150 million worth of business for Diebold out of North Carolina. So North Carolina is not going with Diebold. They didn't pass certification, and they're pretty much kicked out of the state.
And, you know, what surprises me about the whole thing is that it's North Carolina. I mean, it's not exactly what you'd call a swing state. I mean, it's a pretty red state.
But you know what's sad, Joe, is they have better laws than Georgia does. They passed a law that said if you're going to do electronic voting, you have to put the source code in escrow. Georgia has no similar law, so mm-hmm. we're pretty much screwed. But the other good news I wanted to share with you is that Wally O'Dell stepped down, the CEO of Diebold.
Yeah, this just happened a few weeks ago.
And
actually,
there are two class action lawsuits, and my I'm here to talk about the first one brought by a company called Scott & Scott. There's a guy named Neil Rothstein who is running it. And by the way, Neil is a good guy, Joe. He's chased after Halliburton, brought a class action lawsuit against Halliburton.
Turn your cell. What is this? This is like it got to be like a movie theater here. You can't be having your cell phone going.
Oh, I'm just a popular person. It could be someone important. It could be, you know, George Bush.
Well, you go get your
us.
Phone, and I'll sit here and pretend like I'm saying something important. Well, but don't talk on the phone. Whoever they are, just get rid of them because we're doing something important. And you got the goofiest cell phone ringer. What is that song?
Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me? Anyway.
You crazy lesbians.
That was just my friend Gloria, who was awesome. But I'm going to give everybody Neil's cell phone. Anybody that's a Diebold shareholder.
Oh, wait, you want to give a guy's cell phone number out on the air?
It's on the press release. Okay. It's on the press release. He wants people to call him. Neil's a good guy. He chased after Halliburton in a class action lawsuit. He has litigated against some of the biggest, and in fact, Enron, some of the biggest, most evil corporations. He fights for the little man. He's a really cool guy. And his cell phone is 619-251-0887. Call him if he – okay, he is
– say it again. You got to say it twice at
okay,
least.
Okay, let me – hold on. I got to pull it up. 619-251-0887.
Now, he's not going to get mad because
dozens
of people who are going to call him.
No, if you're a Diebold shareholder, call him if you can. Try to convince any of the mutual funds that own Diebold stocks to join the class action lawsuit. It just gives his firm leverage to put Diebold out of business. But the bottom line is that Wally O'Dell stepped down. The class action lawsuit is brought up against all of the executives, from Swiderski to Yurosevich to Wally O'Dell. All the bad guys at Diebold are being implicated for insider trading between a period of October and of last year and September of this year. And mostly because their stock dropped 15.5%. And that's because, guess what? The activists have been kicking them out. They kicked them out of – just now they got kicked out of California for not being able to certify the software. This is new news as of today, but they're being kicked out of Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's good.
So North Carolina, Pennsylvania, California, anybody that owns Diebold needs to realize that if they don't win these states, then they're not going to make their numbers.
Now, if only we can get our own act together.
Well, Georgia's going to sue. And eventually somebody is going to bring
who's leading
actions.
The lawsuit? I mean, I know you started your
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
I can't talk about it. So.
Well, what I mean is, no, you were doing a while ago. You were
doing
the auditing.
I still want to pursue the open records requests, which were denied. And I think every county has violated that. They have violated a basic open records request that I issued. So. The bad news for Georgia is that I'm making money again, and so now I have money to go pursue them.
There you go.
That's the only reason I wasn't doing it before was they pretty much bankrupted me. So now I'm
well. You
back making money. I got a job in Hawaii, Joe. Isn't that cool?
That's wonderful.
You going to come visit me?
Yeah, sure. You can pay my airfare?
Absolutely. Well, Why not?
Then I'll come down there and visit you. I've been
Waikiki Beach, man.
I've been invited to several different places. My friend Pete up in Chicago said he had an extra room in his apartment. And actually, I've been considering going up there for a couple of weeks or so and just scoping around Chicago, seeing if maybe I can find some work up there. And maybe move up there. I don't know.
You'll have to bring my cat with you.
Not to Chicago. I'm only taking care of her for a little while. Him. Keep
Matisse.
Saying her. I'm only taking care of him for a little while. I'm not, you know.
Don't worry. I want Matisse in Hawaii with me.
I'm like a grandfather when it comes to pets. I like petting other people's pets, but I don't like taking care of them. So I'm doing you this favor because, you know,
giving you my car for this
That's
time.
Right. That's right. And, but no, And you got your job, and I got my crappy little job. You know, I was talking about this to some other people. We have the dumbest customers in the world where I work. We get people call up. And I don't know what it is with some people. I don't know if it's a Lithonia thing or not. One of the guys there told me it was a black thing, but to be perfectly honest, I haven't really noticed any race distinctions. It seems to be equal opportunity stupidity out there in Lithonia. But everybody who calls up my store, I work at a Papa John's pizza place, and I answer the phones. That's all I do. And maybe a little cleaning up every now and then, nothing big, part-time work. But I get so many calls. People demand that they want me to read practically the whole menu to them before they decide. Now, when you call up, everybody listening, when you call up a pizza place or a Chinese restaurant, any place that delivers, and I'm sure it's the same way with you, do you at least have a good idea of what you want? I mean, maybe not always exactly, but you know you want to get, you know, like when I order a pizza out, I like sausage and green peppers. That's what I like. And for myself, I'll order a single large pizza because what I don't eat, I can always stuff in the fridge. And actually, if I'm really hungry, I can put away an entire large pizza. And you're shaking your head. Oh, my God, how can you eat that much?
I've seen you, Joe. I know that you put away food like nobody's business.
Well, you see, the thing about it is usually when you're with me, I generally haven't eaten in a while. And sometimes that's like my only meal of a day. So that's actually not good for you.
Well, that's bad. You should eat 3 meals a day.
Yeah, I know. But I don't know. You know, I get caught up with stuff.
Yeah.
I get busy doing things. And that's, you know, it's not like I'm trying to conserve food to save money, which I'm really kind of not because I do pretty well as far as food is concerned because I know how to eat cheaply. You know, I make my soup and I do this, and I'm actually a decent cook for a single guy. But a lot of times I just get busy and I forget to eat. Kathy used to bug me about that all the time. Said, have you eaten today? What? Oh, yeah, food. I forgot there was food.
Well, it's the fuel that runs the body. You can't operate without it.
Well, I got a lot of reserves to live off of. You know, I saw you're familiar with Bart Cop, right?
Yep.
I saw a video that my friend Mike sent me, and it was of the Julie Fest for Julie Hyatt Steele that they had a few years back. And Julie Hyatt Steele was one of the main figures, not a main figure, but an important figure in the Whitewater case. She was in fact the only person who was imprisoned for that case alone. There were other, the Monica Lewinsky case some people got, but at any rate, they had like a big fundraising thing for her, and Bart Kopp was one of the main organizers, and I had never seen him in life, and you know, I saw him in the video, and I'm like, man, he looks a lot different from what I expected. He's from Oklahoma, so I kind of expected this tall, lanky, Lazarus Long-looking type of guy with a grizzled beard, but he was a big, chubby, he looked like Skip Carey from the Atlanta Braves. He looked really kind of like that, and I'm thought, man, that's a really weird image that I got of him. But Bart Cop radio show, by the way, is a good radio show. If you go to bartcop.com, but you got to pay for that. So I've got some segments of his show. I think I'll throw some on here today for people to listen to. I don't pay for the show, but he put up a show for free. Anyway, we're getting way off the subject of what we were talking about.
So let's talk politics.
What do you think is going to happen with the Diebold thing? Do you really think that we're going to get rid of these machines?
I think Diebold is going to go the way of Enron and all the big guys. You know, eventually the criminals get put in jail. I mean, Bernie Ebers got 25 years jail sentence. Everybody said, no, they never put the CEO of WorldCom away. Well, the guy's going to be sitting in a jail cell. There's no buying your way out of it. It really happens.
Is it going to be a nice jail cell, or is it going to be a crappy
jail
cell?
No, it's going to be a crappy one. Here's the thing. Americans don't believe.
Is he going to get butt-fucked by Bubba somewhere?
Yeah,
that's what I want to see.
He's probably going to have to pay off the Bubbas not to bother him. But the funny part is the wheels of justice move slowly, but they do eventually move, and it may take 5 years, 10 years. My theory with Diebold is if what comes out of discovery from this class action lawsuit – and I'm not allowed to talk about all the stuff, but there's a mounting amount of evidence that Diebold knew exactly what it was doing when it bought GEMS, that the intent was to rig the election. And
going to deliver the electoral votes for Bush for Ohio.
Oh, it did it all across the country.
That's what Odell said, yeah.
Well, you know, that's why Peter King said it's all over but the counting and we'll take care of the counting.
Right.
He's the New York representative, Peter King. And so that's why they were sitting so smug. Do you remember election night? Do you remember how smug Bush and Cheney looked?
Oh, yeah.
And do you remember how Cheney, like, started driving his motorcade before the election results?
Mm-hmm.
I always – something was really fishy about that, why Cheney would start his motorcade to go hook up with Bush and be there to be – you know, because I pay attention to what Cheney does because we all know he's really running the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought – you know, if he lost, he would have looked like a buffoon, you know, going over to where Bush was with no victory. So,
well, I knew that the fix was in when in 2000 when they announced the Florida results and George turned to his brother Jeb and said, you know, the look on their eyes basically go down there and take care of business. And with the help of James Baker and Cheney and a bunch of other people, that's what they did.
Well, a lot of people don't realize this, Joe. Did you know that September 12th, 2001 was the date they were supposed to release the actual final count of the ballots from Florida?
Mm-hmm.
It was something Al Gore was really insistent on.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it funny that September 11th happened the day before
This
big report was supposed to go out?
Well, you know, I've talked about September 11th before, and I remember where I was. I was not doing the radio show just yet. I was still doing my Pax Liberalis blog before I did the Cup of Joe blog, and the first word popped into my head while that was going on was Reichstag. That was almost the first word. Now, I'm not saying that they intentionally caused the accident. There's been a lot of rumors. Some of them, I think, are fairly silly, like the one that says that a plane never hit the Pentagon. I thought that's kind of silly. And the one that says that they planted bombs in the World Trade Center so that they would fall because the airplane couldn't possibly have caused it. You know, whether that's true or not, the important thing to me was what they did about that afterwards. Now, if, you know, if you really wanted to be a perfectly popular president and welcomed as a hero, what you could have done was united everybody, you know, gotten with the people of Europe and all that and say, okay, you know, now we realize what you've been going through. Let's all work together to fight terrorism. Because, you know, you don't fight terrorism through conventional means. You fight them with intelligence. You fight them with infiltration. And you fight them by building a better world. Because people who are, you know, better off economically, people who have hope for the future, they don't have any desire to strap a bomb to themselves and, you know, drive a car into a building and blow themselves up. You know, people who have futures don't do that. But people who have no hope in the world have no fear. And so to me, the important thing is how they reacted to that. And they reacted to that in typical militaristic alpha male way. Said, you know, all this chest beating. Said, oh, we're going to get him. And he made the big speech in the rubble with the firemen. Oh, we're going to get him dead or alive. And you know what? Osama's still out there. You know, they managed to get Hussein, but you know what? Hussein is making great points at his trial right now. Just, you know, I don't recognize your authority. Screw you. And I'm happy that he's doing it. He's a murdering bastard, don't get me wrong, but that still doesn't give us the right to just go ahead and do stuff like that. And certainly, if we were going to do it to Iraq, we should have done it to a lot of other places, too. Hell, if we had real balls, we'd go after China. You know, if we were really serious about that, because they have just as bad human rights abuses. So, but in one of my Cup of Joe reports, I talked about how we become a nation of cowards. Remember Admiral Yamamoto?
Mm-hmm.
You know who Admiral Yamamoto was, right? Architect of the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Yep.
Do you remember what he said after Pearl Harbor about the United States?
We're a paper tiger?
No.
Okay.
He said
Yamamoto
said was that I fear that we have awakened a sleeping giant and filled him with a great wrath.
Mm-hmm.
A great wrath? A great wrath. Not a great wrath. The grapes of wrath. you know, basically saying, look, you know, America has, you know, hasn't really been that involved in world affairs and stuff. They were a little bit in World War I, well, a bit in a big way, but they really, yeah, after that, they still kind of pulled back and there was a lot of isolationists. But Pearl Harbor brought America out into the world in a big, big way. And Bush liked to use that analogy for September 11. But you know what? We're instead of a big giant now, we're just like a little cowardly scared man who sits in the corner and, you know, shoots flies with bazookas.
I like the paper tiger analogy. We act like we have a big roar, but when you're spending 50% of the world's money on military mm-hmm. and you're only earning 4% of the gross domestic product worldwide, then you right off the bat you have an imbalance, meaning why do we have to be the police state for the rest of the world? Why can't we engage the international forces to help us go do things? And why do we consider Iraq more, like you said, deserving than, say, Africa, where they're having mass genocide in Darfur?
Sure, and we're allied with some people like in Uzbekistan who are far worse than Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
But because, you know, they're our, you know, they may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch, right?
Yeah.
And the same way we did with the Shah of Iran. So, you know, it's all this stuff just coming back to haunt us.
Well, I tell you, there are two movies, Joe, that Americans need to watch, period. And it's Syriana and the movie Munich by Steven Spielberg. You haven't seen either of them, have you?
No, not yet.
Syriana, the premise is, what would happen if you had a progressive Saudi prince that really was going to bring democracy and open up essentially a free oil exchange? He would sell oil to the highest bidder. He would have, he would basically put Saudi Arabia in the world of progressive. They would allow women to have rights. And so the premise of this movie is that this man had, all this going for him. And then all of a sudden, the American government saw him as such a threat because he was going to put into question the army bases, the military bases there. He was going to put into question selling the oil to America.
So naturally, we'd have to have this guy killed.
So we killed him.
Yeah.
And George Clooney played a great character because at first he was a CIA agent, and he was the one that was supposed to kill the guy. And he failed in killing the guy. Then he started asking questions. Then by the end of the movie, he tries to prevent the guy from getting killed. So it really shows how Americans who once thought America was worth fighting for, we're now starting to question our moral rights across the world. We're starting to question, what are we really doing here?
Well, and I've talked about this before. Lincoln in his Gettysburg Address, he talked about saving government of, by, and for the people. While he was addressing America in general, he was really talking more about the state of mankind in particular. See what I'm saying? You know, it doesn't have to be this geographic area of what is America. It's about the rights of man and of government that is responsible to its citizens. That's what they were fighting to preserve in the Civil War, even though a lot of the soldiers didn't realize it or didn't really care at the time. They were just there to do their individual duty. But, that's what that fight was all about. That's what the American Revolution was all about. It wasn't about independence from Great Britain. It was about the whole idea of self-rule, and Lincoln fought to preserve that. And we're running into this type of situation that they had in ancient times where a country becomes hugely successful. They dealt with great adversity in the past. The Romans overcame Hannibal and other attempts. And then they became an empire and lasted a while. But then they finally fell because they were so powerful that they forgot what it was like before when they were poor. And they just figured they can lord it over everybody, and it didn't work that way. And we're finding out the same thing. We've gotten lazy. We've gotten selfish. We've gotten cowardly, I think that's going to be our downfall eventually. But you know what? If America falls, that's okay, because eventually something else will come up in its stead. And I really believe in the truly global idea of a single political entity, but which has its basis in all the citizens of the world.
Yeah, but I look at the European Union and how slow they move and how they have been slow to embrace technology.
Well, how fast do you think it's going to be, though?
Well, GSM, which is the world standard for cell phones, while it did require the parliaments of the different European countries, it was essentially an extra governmental standard body.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was driven by profit motive, it went like wildfire. And now GSM, your GSM cell phone works in China. It works. Now, if you had an American CDMA or TDMA cell phone, it doesn't work anywhere else but America.
Yeah, I know.
Which ought
I know.
To tell you how stupid America is technology-wise. And that's why our cell phone companies and our telephone companies are going out of business, is they just don't get that you have to participate in the global standard.
Right.
But speaking of, but I wanted to say a little bit also about, this is changing the subject, but about Steven Spielberg's Munich. It's odd that you would have basically a Jewish man making a movie about apparently 10, or I'm sorry, 11 Palestinians. They called themselves Black September, were killed, the Olympic athletes from 1972 Munich.
72 Olympics, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's really odd that Spielberg...
Well, is he doing it from the point of view of the Palestinians? Is that what he's doing?
He covered both sides. And you know what his whole premise was? Violence begets violence. Well, and so rather than show the Israelis as being the heroes, and it's what it is about one normal Israeli guy that gets hired by... And by the way, Golda Meir, they did a really great job portraying her in the movie. What a strong woman. Anyway, I have a lot of respect for Golda Meir. She did a lot when she held the position of power. But anyway, they hired some guy that would be the least likely to be a terrorist, and they had like four or five other guys. And they ended up killing 9 of the 11. But what happened was, if they killed one guy, then they'd find out that that guy got replaced. Then they'd have to go kill that other guy. Then this woman tried to kill them. Then they had to kill her. And all of a sudden, the movie just went off into these directions of all the people they had to kill. And at some point, the lead character, some of the people that are in his team started to question, why are we killing all these people? Not that they felt like it was a good thing that these Munich people were killed, or that they didn't love the Palestinians, but they started to just look at their own life, the impact of killing on their own life. And this man had a kid and a wife, and he finally just said, I'm tired of killing. I want to go be with my wife and kid. And if nothing else, I mean, it sends chills up my spine that theme should make it out to the Palestinian world, to the Israeli world. It should make it out to the jihad world. It should make it out to Afghanistan. And hopefully it makes it out to Bush and Cheney and those guys that violence begets violence. And you're never going to accomplish anything by killing people.
For the Bush-Cheney people, since they never actually get to see the results or, you know, actually be a part of what's going on, they're... What's the word? Insulated from the effects of it. Mm-hmm. They why should they care? You know, it's just more pawns. It's like you know, they call Bush the first CEO president. Well, he runs the country like a CEO, where the CEO just basically gives directives and all the grunts are supposed to just take care of it. And if it doesn't get done, it's the grunts that get blamed. I mean, I saw it in a small way when I worked at Nextel, the shop that I had there. We were the slowest shop in the district because we had the least traffic. And there were times I'd go through an 8-hour shift and I'd maybe see three people come in the door. And not all of them are wanting to buy cell phones. Some of them wanted to buy accessories. They're not viable customers. Yet all the blame for low sales was going on the salespeople. We were simply expected to somehow manufacture sales when the upper management wasn't doing anything to help that. You know, and I wound up getting fired by my district manager because I told him I could do his job. But basically, it was very easy to me. Get a sign out there, get people in the door. You know, and that's what I told him. I said, look, you get people in the door, I'll sell them. But if nobody comes in, I can't sell anybody.
Well, the point is, Joe, that they can build a company a different way. They don't have to punish their employees. They don't have to punish their customers.
But you see, that's just the kind of social system that we have nowadays. There's mm-hmm. the people who are up on top, and we know everything, and you're all idiots. And, you know, you couldn't possibly, you know, and they believe they're infallible. And Bush is a perfect example of that.
But the people always end up winning because look at these class action lawsuits. I mean, someone as small as a shareholder, if you own 10 shares of Diebold, you're going to get a settlement. You're going to get cash in your pocket for their stupidity, for the bad things that they did. You know, it's to me, I used to say that the Founding Fathers' experiment in democracy was a failed experiment. And I do think that we have to tweak aspects of democracy because the citizens don't have as much direct input or direct control of their government, and that's a big problem. I think we should have a fourth branch, and the fourth branch is the actual direct citizen involvement. And for Congress to pass laws, it has to get approved by this citizen body.
Well,
and the citizen body has teachers.
If you do that, then
mechanics.
You have no need for Congress at all.
Well, no, you do, because Congress are going to be the ones that read the 400-page documents. The average citizen's not going to read the 400-page budget
document.
That's
why you have Congress, so that's just the thing. I mean, we live in a representative
democracy. But
they
can't just blank check pass things like they do now.
Well, but the thing about it is, okay, when the government goes out to get a contract, right, to hire a company like Halliburton or something like that, do they want to go to the citizens every time? Do the citizens have that kind of information?
No, but wouldn't it be amazing if they did?
Yeah, it would be horrible. Could you imagine? You think things are bad enough
now?
No, people
get
pushed around by hot-button issues very easily.
I'm saying, Joe, that right now we have two representatives from Georgia. We have Saxby Chambliss and Johnny Isaacson, mm-hmm. who essentially represent us in the Senate. Imagine if, in addition to that, they had a body of like 20 people, a mechanic, a teacher, working people. I'm totally serious. And anything Johnny and what's-his-name did had to get approved by that 20-person panel. I tell you what, it would put the kibosh on a lot of the crap that they're pushing through.
If we just took care of our electoral problems and made it simpler and made it more accessible, that you wouldn't need that.
Here's the catch-22, Joe. I'm a citizen trying to take care of the electoral problems. I have no direct access to my government. Besides freedom of information requests, which they deny. Besides, I can't sue Diebold directly. I have to
agree with what you're
saying,
but I don't think that what you're saying is any solution. In fact, I think that would make things a lot worse. Because trust me, I know how stupid regular working people are. As far as that's concerned, they don't really care. What do they care about? They go to work, they do their job, they come home, they watch American Idol on TV.
Right, but put Joe and put some Daily Coast people and put some other folks on a panel.
Well, who determines they're going to get on the panel? I understand what you're coming from.
You haven't voted in.
That's just adding another layer that really doesn't do anything. Well, I think the system works well, but we do have to fix it. And I think what the mistake the founding fathers made, if it was a mistake, because they really couldn't have predicted it, was that while they took care of the checks and balances within the government, they didn't have any kind of checks and balances for the environment that goes on outside of the government, free enterprise and stuff like that. For many, many years, don't forget, in this country, it was considered verboten for the government to step in any way, shape, or form. I was watching
big business?
Into business. I mean, I was watching
I don't know. The Sherman Antitrust was a
that
big
was
piece.
That, but that was not until like the 19 okay. you know late 18th century, okay. late 19th century. They were doing a thing about Teddy Roosevelt.
Which is
pivotal. They had a big coal workers strike, and because the coal workers went on strike, millions of people in the north, and coal at that time was the oil. This was before gasoline came around. So imagine if there was a big gasoline strike and people couldn't get gas for their cars, they couldn't get gas for their heating. You know, a lot of the country would really suffer because of that. And so Teddy Roosevelt took the extraordinary step at the time of getting the head of the coal company and the union leaders to come to a meeting together. Of course, the head of the company refused. He said he wouldn't convert with criminals. That's what he thought of the union people. But the point is, at the time, it was considered extremely, extremely radical. And, you know, it proved that once the economy changed, when we went from an agrarian to an industrial society, that we had to have different ways of dealing with things. So you have to have a kind of checks and balances between free enterprise, free government, and a free press.
Right, but Joe, we've got so much dirt on Bush. And we can't even – Patrick Fitzgerald can't even –
Well, that's because everything's out of balance. It's because the same people who financed Bush are also own the newspapers and own the TV stations, own the means of communication. You know,
right.
That's
but
why.
If the founding fathers designed the system well enough, it wouldn't matter that the press were
but
taken
how
over.
How can the founding fathers have possibly foreseen the technology that we have today?
Well, that's why I'm saying it needs to be changed.
Well, that's why we have – that's why they built the Constitution the way they did. You know, right. You can amend
and
it.
And it hasn't –
Well, it takes time.
Well,
like you
who
said,
amends
justice,
it? The Senate.
Well, justice.
The unrepresentative Senate.
The justice, it works slowly, but it still works.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of the economic problems that we're going through now are because of technological changes, just because of the way the Industrial Revolution changed the way things were. So that's part of it. I'm not saying that it's the cause of it, the total cause of it, but it is a part of it. And part of the big problem is that the government is too slow to respond to it and didn't realize that. You really do have to have a government that thinks 10 or 15 years in advance and tries to, if not predict, anticipate what kind of technology is going to be there or what the end results. When they built the federal highway system, they couldn't possibly believe that there would be enough cars, you know, to fill it. They figured we would build that. And then, you know, all of a sudden there's a huge explosion. They didn't anticipate the rise of the suburbs like that. They wanted it. Eisenhower wanted it partly for military reasons because he based it on the Autobahn in Germany. But it turned out to be a huge boon for business, who didn't have to pay a penny to build the roads, right? Of course, they bitch about government interference all the time, but they're all for it when it helps them, even unwillingly. But the problem is, we also have a lot more people now than we did back then.
I agree.
I think that maybe we should increase the size of Congress.
Yeah, that would be good. Maybe that's the best of both worlds.
Maybe we can do 3 senators per state instead of 2. You know?
That's an interesting number, because 3 is a very interesting number.
And then you can do just with more people, because a congressman now represents a lot more people than they used to.
Well, you know, everybody likes to talk in terms of red states and blue states. I think we need to start talking in terms of Hispanic states, African-American states, because when you give these people the right to vote, you're going to find out that Georgia is really an African-American state, that if you did the numbers – across Fulton County, DeKalb, Cobb. They're like five counties that if you win five counties in Georgia, you win the whole state. And all those counties are predominantly African-American, Hispanic, Chinese, Indian. I mean, the great thing about Georgia
is – all nestled around this area.
We've attracted a real ethnic mix, which I love.
Yeah, we're talking about Fulton, DeKalb, Cobb.
Fulton, DeKalb, Cobb.
Cherokee.
Even Cobb. Cobb is
Cherokee,
turning African-American. You look at who is from Cobb County, Alicia Thomas Morgan, amazing woman. She got elected by PFAW, People for the American Way, to represent their office in Georgia. She stood up against the voter ID and sang while they were gaveling her down, saying, get off the podium. She started singing an African-American ritual song saying, we ain't gonna take this crap anymore. You can't make us stop. You can't make us go backwards when we've fought for our civil rights all these years. So, you know, the bottom line
I should
line
let you know, by the way, every time you touch that desk, it registers. That's why I've been waving you off when you've been – because every time – when I do this, that's going to – you know, it doesn't sound loud to you.
I'm just creating a sound studio for – okay, Joe, I'll stop.
You don't know what to do with your hands. Okay. I don't mind it so much. I mean, because I really can't hear it, but I can see it on the thing here. It goes through the roof.
Sorry,
so,
audience.
That's okay.
I'll be better.
Should be nice. See, if I do like this, that's just me rubbing the microphone.
Well, let's talk about spying now. What's your take on spying?
Let's take a little break first.
Okay.
Because we've been going for about a half an hour now.
Okay.
And I want to get the BuzzFlash people to have their thing. And then we'll be back and we'll talk about the domestic spying and other things.
Okay.
We'll be back. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. The GOP legal hit squad of Joseph DeGenova and Victoria Tensing were all over the place during the Clinton impeachment drama, speciously arguing why a president should be impeached over an act of fellatio. The husband and wife team of Republican lawyers were as ubiquitous as mud in a pig trough. As one blogger noted, during the 1990s, Victoria Tensing and her husband, Joe DeGenova, made over 300 appearances on cable television in the service of the Republican agenda, often pimping for their friend Ken Starr and his $35 million investigation into President Clinton's sex life. But now that real crimes have been committed against the American people, the Munsters of the GOP are suddenly laughing off investigating Bush and Cheney. Literally. The gruesome twosome of DeGenova and Tensing, also law partners, should be worn out. Tensing, in particular, just came off a whirlwind of media appearances claiming that Scooter Libby and Karl Rove aren't guilty of anything serious in outing a CIA operative. You gotta hand it to him for being so fatuous with such feigned conviction. We'd nominate DeGenova, along with his partner, in defending the indefensible, but Tensing has clearly been the more visible of the two in speaking out on behalf of GOP legal improprieties lately. So we're honoring Victoria for her individual contributions to mendacity as this week's BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite. Remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com, so many Republican hypocrites. Woo, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
We're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And once again, welcome to everyone listening from White Rose Society on the podcasts or on rantradio.com. And we're here again with Phyllis Euster of countpaperballots.com. Hi, Phyllis.
Hey.
You're looking forward to Hawaii, I see.
I'm going to have to learn how to surf, and so are you. Those 10-foot waves?
I've never been to Hawaii. My dad was in Hawaii because he was. It wasn't exactly vacation time. He was there at Pearl Harbor.
Oh, that
he was actually there at the attack. He's a Pearl Harbor survivor.
Oh, I bet he has interesting stories. Yeah. I always think of those cheesy Elvis movies when I think of Hawaii. I don't know why. Blue Hawaii, that's it.
Yeah. Who's that? I love Eddie Murphy's bit about Elvis. He said Elvis was such a good singer, they let him be in movies. He couldn't even act.
No.
Just let him sing his lines. Elvis, we got to win this race. We got to win this race.
Yeah.
Elvis, have some lemonade. Lemonade. That cool refreshment.
I liked all the names back then. Chiclet and... What were some of the names?
I never was a big fan of Elvis, so I didn't really care for any of his movies.
I guess I'm thinking of Psycho Beach Party, but that's a totally different movie.
I remember years ago, Saturday Night Live, when it first came out, and they had Carrie Fisher on. This was after Star Wars, mm-hmm. and they were doing a beach blanket bingo spoof, and Carrie Fisher played like an exchange student from another planet with a gold bikini. She looked really hot, by the way. And Gilda Radner was playing Annette Funicello, and she said, "Hi, I'm Annette, and these are my breasts." Because that's what everybody thinks. Wow, that's a mouseketeer. She really grew up. Oh, boy, look at the hooters on her. What the hell are we talking about?
Domestic
spy. And they were spying on us on the beaches, too. They had Vincent Price wandering around saying, "Hi, kids. I'm here with the FBI. I got any secrets?" I talked about this on the reports, too, and the news has been going around about it, and they're trying desperately to find any excuse to say that what they've been doing was legal. But basically, they've been wiretapping us and listening in on our phones. And that's not good. That's not legal. But... of course, it's the Bush administration, and they feel that they can get away with anything. Whether or not they can remains to be seen. So let's get this straight. It's a little complicated, but not too complicated. There's an organization called FISA, the Federal Information Security Act. I think that's what it is. And when you want to do domestic spying, and there are cases where it's legal, and there are cases in which even I would say that it would be acceptable to a certain extent. But if you want to spy on someone, and if you need to do it quickly for national security reasons, that old canard, then all you have to do is you can go up to 72 hours after the fact. You can go get permission, and they almost always approve of it because, you know, it's just like that. But the Bush administration didn't even bother to go through that. And the people they were spying on had nothing to do with terrorism. It was like a Greenpeace and... what the hell? Some of the other groups had just some little rinky dink protest groups, and they've even gone so far as in some. This wasn't so much the Bush people, but a lot of other national security people infiltrating little protest groups that were showing up in areas, actually pretending to be one of the protesters. And that's really kind of creepy that they do this. But you know, it goes back a ways. This is very Nixonian, and it's also very Reagan. My friend Alex, his dad. Used to be a student at Berkeley. Now he's like a professor in a college in Florida. And he was talking about the riots at Berkeley. And he said that what had happened was he knew what was going on. And he saw that the people there that were instigating the fighting down in Berkeley were Secret Service people. And you always knew it was Secret Service people who were pretending to be hippies. Because it was kind of like Jack Webb in Dragnet, that one time where they showed him trying to go undercover as a civilian. And, of course, you could tell the guy was a cop. I mean, he had a broomstick lodged so far up his ass it left a little nub on his head. You know what I mean? You ever see him walk on that show? And so, I've got a big broomstick up my ass.
We could always tell the FBI agents that monitor the Howard Dean campaigns.
Because they try to blend in like they're one of us,
but they're
not.
First of all, crew cut, duh. You know, it's going to be a cop. You know, I don't know how many hippies have crew cuts.
Don't they ever talk to Frank Serpico? Don't they ever get with him about how to be fucking undercover?
Then you watch them and they get into those black cars with the black shaded windows.
But you know, and it's like, but apparently they were the ones that instigated all the fighting at Berkeley. And of course, like the next, and what he said was that somebody let the cat out of the bag because like the day before. Someone made a mistake, and they had a tape of Reagan saying because of the riots, they were going to declare martial law in this area. And they were like, "What riots?" And the next day is when the riots started. So there was some creepy stuff going on there.
But I have a curiosity, Joe, and tell me what you think. Where are the Americans when we've essentially proven that our government's spying on us? This is so beyond McCarthyism. This is like affecting every American
now. We're cowards, man. What did I just say in the last segment? We're cowards.
But, you know, is it cowards or is it that our press – the NSA was able to shut down that story before it even got to the papers. Mm-hmm. Really, the truth about it hasn't really filtered
out. I think people know that this stuff is going on. I wouldn't be surprised if they're listening to this show right now. My friend in the Netherlands, who allows me storage space to store the Cup of Joe report and other things, he told me once that it was taking 2 days for my email to get through to him sometimes. And he thinks that they were being – it was having a hold put on it. So I don't really know what the hell. Look, if they're afraid of me, they're more paranoid than I am because I am so low on the friggin' totem pole here. I mean, I'm just this little guy with a little two-bit radio show that maybe 200 or 300 people listen to.
All the people they've got monitoring you and people like my friend Gloria, who's with the peace movement, why aren't they out in Saudi Arabia monitoring the assholes that are driving all the craziness there?
Because they're not the real threats to the Bush people. The real threats to the Bush people, the American people. Just like Mr. Bush is a greater danger to the American people than Saddam Hussein and then Osama bin Laden, because all of the better damage can be done internally. You know what I mean? It's like the enemy of the German people before they invaded Poland was not the Polish. The enemy of the German people was Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. They were the enemies of the German people just as much as the Bush administration and their financial backers are enemies of the American people.
Today, my mom cannot talk about World War II. It was such a traumatic event. I mean, she got taken to SS headquarters when she was four.
She had to prove she wasn't Jewish,
and her mom,
right?
Well, her mom, which nobody had papers back then, Joe. So a lot of people went to Auschwitz just because there were no papers, whether they were Jewish or not. Well, luckily, they knew that this was coming down, and they had fake papers, but there was a Polish woman, and there was a Polish woman sitting right next to them. She got put on the train because she was just this poor little working woman.
And it's all the little, and I got people who say, well, they're not out openly shooting us, so they can't be Nazis. And I've never argued that they were Nazis. I have argued that they are fascists because they still have a lot of the same methods. The propaganda, the use of propaganda.
Yeah, but I would argue that they've put the Nazis in place down in New Orleans because they now have the police officers, they have the National Guard all working on their behalf in three states in the America. Mm-hmm. Mississippi, Alabama, and New Orleans are now depression economy police states. Period. End of story. Anyone that says otherwise is not paying attention.
Well, it's unfortunate because of this. And of course, it's just a way for the biggest land grab in history. Maybe when they rebuild the levees and it becomes like white New Orleans, we ought to bomb the levees and flood them again. What was it that one congressman said about the hurricane? He said, we couldn't do the redistricting, but God did it for us. Like it was God who did that intentionally. Although it was weird that the French Quarter was almost totally undamaged, and that's supposedly the worst place of sinners in a lot.
Well, it's amazing how there are only really five people out there that are really fighting for America. John Boniface, Barbara Boxer, John Conyers, Cynthia McKinney, Howard
Dean. Everybody's
afraid.
Everybody's afraid.
Well, what are they afraid of? I mean, you and I are.
You see what happens to people when they get caught on. I mean, nobody can defend them.
So let them slash my tires. I don't care.
I'm talking about political humiliation. Look, they people assassinated John Kennedy. They assassinated Robert Kennedy. They assassinated Dr. King. They can only assassinate so many people before other people, catch up to them. So what they've done is they do political assassinations now. They humiliate people publicly, like they did with Jimmy Carter, like they tried to do with Bill Clinton, like they did with Howard Dean. I mean, that whole Scream thing was so completely taken out of context, especially when you understand that he had one of those types of mics that drowned out the entire audience. Anybody that was in there said, we couldn't hear ourselves think.
Because the DNC, which is a very Dixiecrat organization, I don't care what anyone says, Dixiecrat, DNC, DLC, they're all run by the same corporate, beholding types of folks. Mm-hmm. Somehow he got the biggest redneck here, Bobby Kahn, who runs the Georgia Democratic Party, who is as corrupt as Kathy Cox. I mean, he's not a nice guy. Somehow Howard Dean got those people to vote for him. So, the bottom line is he's in the most powerful Democratic position in the country. He controls the money.
I actually met Bobby Kahn at a meeting.
Did you? What'd you think of him?
He seemed nice in person, but I don't know
redneck.
That much about his history. I mean,
I look at Kathy Cox.
And in fact, I wrote a letter to the Creative Loafing here, which reminds me, I need to get a Creative Loafing so I can see my letter, because they printed it, apparently.
Super.
But they had a big article about Kathy Cox, and it was talking about whether she was going to be the next governor. And they did a whole big thing about how, a lot of us Democrats are pissed off at her because of the Diebold thing. And I said, look, there is a lot to admire about her as an administrator and as, you know, a personality and stuff like that. And I've seen her in person. I mean, she had that town hall meeting there. And we're upset because not only did she bring the machines here, but she continues to defend them using their own Diebold's own talking points. And I said, look, I would be perfectly happy to see her as governor of this state, okay? If she would recant or, you know, try to get rid of the machines that helped bring in, I would gladly sacrifice her political career, and her political career, mind you, not her physically, her political career, for the sake of getting free and fair elections in Georgia and the rest of the country. I would sacrifice the political career of any politician, no matter how good.
Joe, she could go into the governorship by recanting Diebold and by agreeing to suing them. She could go into the governor's office with $150 million in funds from Diebold. But here's the bad news. The bad news is anybody who thinks Kathy Cox is a nice guy, she just bought $15 million new equipment to do electronic, guess what? Poll books.
Yeah.
Well, what's the one thing when I did my audit that I could count on? The poll books. Why? Because you sign the poll book.
Right.
It's the only way that we knew who actually showed up on election day to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Diebold just sold us $15 million worth of shoddy crap
to do
electronic poll books because it was the one way that we were going to beat them.
That's why I'm against Kathy Cox. Unfortunately, Mark Taylor isn't that much better of a choice.
Who cares about Mark? You know what? Mark may be the evil demon from hell. He's 10 times better than Kathy Cox. A, he did not defraud the citizens of Georgia. B, he did not participate in bringing in the worst electronic voting vendor of all the ones out there. The bottom line is, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say it with some confidence. I can pretty much guarantee you Kathy Cox will not be governor.
And on that pleasant note, we have to bid you adieu for all you French folk out there, because we're all little French commies, communists, all that stuff, all that nasty stuff. You know, when they were doing the whole Freedom Fries thing, I wanted to reverse it. I said, instead of changing French to freedom, we should change freedom to French. So instead we'd have the song, Born French, as French as the wind blows.
You know, we were talking about NSA and FBI and all that. It's my theory that those people are, in the end, going to help us, save us, because there are people that are honorable that have made a career of the FBI and the NSA and the CIA who have given mightily for their country, and they're probably just as pissed at Bush for ruining the moral ground that they had before he came to office.
It's very difficult thing to take. I mean, we have our own problems here in Georgia and all that, and you know, Kathy Cox and all that stuff. But it's just a big problem overall in the country that we need to, you know, keep an eye out for things. And you know, we do have, you know, like Fitzgerald. You know, we have he's out there. He's still working for, you know, the American people. And hopefully, Lincoln's dream of keeping government of, by, and for the people alive will remain, because this is a real struggle, and this is a struggle that all the nations go through eventually. You know, dealing with adversity like we dealt with in Civil War and the Great Depression and World War II, and now we're dealing with prosperity, which is what brought down more countries than anything else. And you know, the analogies to Germany and all that stuff. Of course, I always give analogies to ancient Athens and all that, but we're in very, as the Chinese would say, we're in interesting times. And it's very difficult. Phyllis, I want to thank you for coming on the show again.
Well, thanks, Joe. I hope you had a good Christmas.
Yeah, I had a great Christmas, actually. Very nice. And I hope you had a good one.
I miss Kathy, but we got to hang with her kids, so yeah, that worked out.
Yeah, that was nice. We went and saw Chronicles of Narnia, which I enjoyed.
Oh, that's a good movie.
And we saw King Kong before that, too, which I thought was also a good movie. A little long. It was about 3 hours
great,
long.
Great
effects. Great effects. Especially the end with the whole biplane scene on the top of the Empire. I was getting vertigo. Seriously.
It'd be great 3D.
Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks again to everybody listening on the White Rose Society. Thanks for everybody listening on rantradio.com and on your iPods and all the little ways that you listen. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show signing off.
Bye.
Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, oh, in a jar of John. Don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? You'd be a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick. That'll do every trick. Open a can of Dan, make a meal of Sam. But don't give me no mug, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve, a mug of Doug, a cup of...